Okay. A very good morning, everyone, and welcome to my talk about Windows Runtime in Windows 8. My name is Bart De Smet. I'm working at Microsoft Corporation in Redmond, currently in the SQL division, where I'm working on asynchronous programming technologies, including a technology called Reactive Extensions. It turns out I've done some work porting Reactive Extensions to work in Metro-style Windows Runtime-based applications. And so today, I'd like to share with you what Windows Runtime is, why we designed it, and what the main goals are of the Windows Runtime. We have plenty of other talks this week about building Metro-style applications using Windows Runtime from C++ and managed code. So this is really sort of the introductory talk, thinking about or looking at the foundational technologies. Now, a little caveat before I get started. This talk is entirely based on the build content from the conference in Anaheim last year, where we introduced the Windows Developer Preview for Windows 8. Now, that means that by the end of this month, we will actually have the consumer preview available. There's an event in Barcelona on February 29th, and some things may have changed. So the goal of this talk is not so much about talking about specific APIs which might evolve, but rather talk about the core foundation and why we actually designed the Windows Runtime. So be prepared to see some changes in the consumer preview, which is due later this month. So let's get started with a little look at the agenda. First of all, I'd like to talk about what Windows Runtime is. Why did we design it? What's its architecture look like? What are the main components? How does it work? Then next, and actually intertwined with the entire talk, I will give some samples of building Metro-style applications, mainly using JavaScript and C# VB in my talk, because we have a separate talk about using Windows Runtime from C++. But so I will focus on those platforms and show interoperability between different languages using different kinds of APIs. And finally, I'd like to talk about really the core of Windows Runtime, its type system, classes, interfaces, what their roles are, and how certain patterns, like dealing with asynchronous programming, collection-based programming, those kind of things, how those surface in Windows Runtime through the different language projections. So let's get started with what is Windows Runtime. Now, depending who you ask within, you know, the Windows 8 team, they will give you different answers. If it's about the people that say, well, we're building this rich set of applications, this application platform, people will mostly focus on telling you about the APIs. Just like in the .NET framework, you have the .NET framework, and some people will say, you know, the main thing is the BCL and its languages. Some other people will say, well, the kernel of that thing is the CLR. So I will more talk about the underpinnings of the Windows Runtime rather than talking about the rich set of APIs that build on top of it. Now, before I go into the fundamentals, let's actually take a quick look at the APIs we have to build those full-screen, immersive, Metro-style applications on Windows 8. So at the top, of course, we have user interface technologies. You just use the skills that you have to build HTML5 CSS-based applications or XAML-based applications. We leverage technologies like DirectX, SVG, all sorts of great things over there. Then below that, you can talk to different devices, different sensors in your devices, cameras, GPS, you know, accelerometers, those kind of things. Because today, well, inevitably, any device you buy has a bulk load of sensors in it. So to build those rich applications, typically you want to interact with those devices. And in the history, it has been notoriously hard to talk to those. So Windows Runtime makes it tremendously easy to talk to your sensors. We also have media APIs. In fact, I will show you the Capture API to talk to the webcam later on. We have communication APIs to talk to different kinds of services on the web, to do notifications, for example, because increasingly data is being sent to your application rather than you asking for it, like notifications coming from the web. And then at the bottom, we have some fundamentals, like, you know, the threading model, things like, for example, the application model and application services, and we'll talk about some of those things today as well. So that's what the APIs are concerned. Now let's zoom out and take a look what's actually the bigger picture here. So this is the developer platform for Windows 8. This is sort of the overall slide that you will have seen on, you know, the build videos on Channel 9. You will see this slide coming sort of as the introduction to all Windows 8 talks in some way. So at the very bottom, of course, we have the Windows kernel services. As you know, Windows 8 is built on NT technology, so it's the good old Windows NT kernel with lots of enhancements for memory management, scheduling, those kind of things. So we have kernel mode, user mode, system services, all that stuff, you know, is still there, of course. Now, on top of that, we have two stacks. We have desktop applications, which we all know, which is, you know, using technologies like Win32 with C++ and C, using the .NET framework or Silverlight with managed languages like C# and VB, or using browser applications which sit in, you know, Internet Explorer or another browser as the container, possibly using add-ins like Silverlight or Flash or any of those technologies. So that's desktop applications. That's all still there. So you can still run your existing desktop apps on Windows 8. And then next to that, we have this new experience called Metro-style apps, which are those full-screen, immersive, touch-centric, fast, fluid interfaces that you can build using a variety of technologies. And so when you think about classic desktop apps as, you know, languages that are sitting on top of some runtime or some platform, the same thing holds for Metro-style apps. Here we have, at the foundation, the Windows Runtime APIs, which is the thing that does all the work. And on top of that, you build your application code using any language you see fit. If you're a native developer, you can use native technologies combined with XAML. If you're a managed developer, you can use XAML combined with C# or VB. If you're a web developer, you can write the same applications with all the richness of the Windows Runtime APIs using HTML5 CSS and JavaScript as a development language. So it's about giving you choice to talk to those Windows Runtime APIs, which notoriously has been hard. Like just talking, for example, to the webcam in a classic Win32 application, a lot of functions. Try to do it from C#, a lot of pinvoke. Or maybe some comment drop. Windows Runtime really makes it easy to access all that richness in, you know, the operating system from different platforms. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So if you want to have sort of the one-liner that you use tonight at the bar or when you come home to your, you know, family and you want to tell people about what Windows Runtime is, use this one-liner. It's the foundation that you use to build those great Metro-style applications. So now let's take a look at the architecture of Windows Runtime itself. So at the very bottom here, I've drawn Windows Core. So Windows Core is what we all know, you know, user mode, kernel mode, system services, all sorts of facilities in the operating system. And ultimately, you should think about Windows Runtime, the core of Windows Runtime, as sort of being fused together with this Windows Core. But just because we're talking about Windows Runtime, I'm using more of a layer diagram. But the idea of Windows Runtime is to expose the richness of the operating system to all those application platforms on top. So that's the Windows Runtime core. It has a type system, it has classes, interfaces, all sorts of great things, and we'll talk about those in much more detail in just a moment. On top of that, we have all the APIs, so that's sort of, you know, the zoomed out picture of the original slide, the first slide that we saw. I won't really talk about the richness of the APIs. You will see when I dot into the namespaces, there is a lot of stuff to look at. So that's just about giving you access to all sorts of facilities. Then next to that, we have something very, very important and crucial. This is the Windows metadata and the Windows namespace. So all of the APIs in Windows Runtime are organized in a hierarchical namespace-based mechanism. Unlike, for example, header files in C, which are just flat file representations of a bunch of functions that you don't see the forest for the trees. So it's hierarchical namespace, and it's fully self-describing, just like .NET assemblies have metadata that's machine-readable at runtime, at compile time, for tools, for all of those things. All of the Windows Runtime is also described by metadata. And you will see that that enables IntelliSense, Object Browser, all sorts of great things in the developer experience. Now, on top of this, we have so-called language projections. Language projections surface all of these APIs into the language of your choice. So if you're using JavaScript, you want to see collections as if they are JavaScript collections. If you're a CLR developer, you want to see IEnumerable, you know, IList, and all of those kind of things. If you're a C++ developer, collections need to look like things with begin and end so that you can have your iterators and all of those great things that you're accustomed to. Same for asynchronous patterns, all of those things. So language projections make those APIs look and feel as if they're just written in the language that you're using. So that's what language projections do. It's a tiny layer that does some mapping, and we'll talk about that in much detail. And on top of this, you build your Metro-style app. Now, besides that, we have some other facilities like runtime broker to create brokered objects. I will talk about that at the end of the talk. We have some hosts that run, you know, the Windows Runtime Foundation, and then you can build your apps that run inside of those containers. So for example, there is a web host called wwahost.exe, which contains a rendering engine based on Trident, as well as the Chakra JavaScript engine. But it's not a browser by itself. It's just a container that gives you access to Windows Runtime in which your application gets loaded full screen immersive. And then, last but not least, we have some language support, of course. You will see that when we are working in the CLR, when we are working in JavaScript, there are some helper libraries and some facilities built into those runtimes that make it easier for you to use those applications or those APIs better. So, for example, the CLR has to know about the memory model, how, you know, memory is actually allocated and deallocated in Windows Runtime based on addref release. So the CLR needs to know when it brings a Windows Runtime object into managed code that you are actually interacting with it, and when it gets garbage collected, that the release actually is paired up with that, so that you don't have to worry about lifetime management yourself. So there are some extensions to those libraries and facilities to accommodate for that. So, in essence, the developer experience for Windows 8, we want to make it tremendously easy to build those full-screen applications that access all the richness of your, you know, device, you know, touch-centric and all of that, and we want to give you freedom of choice. Freedom of choice meaning if you're a web developer, you can come to the Metro-style application platform. If you're a managed developer, you can. If you're a C++ developer, you can do exactly the same thing as well. So what are the design principles? And then we'll take a look at a little demo. Those are the main four design principles of Windows Runtime. First of all, developer experience is key. Like, you want to have rich IntelliSense, rich tooling support, all the things that people got to love in, for example, just the managed languages, and that historically have been much more of a problem in, like, C++ and, for example, JavaScript. Like, IntelliSense and JavaScript, sometimes it doesn't quite work out. So, you know, we want to improve that, and the Windows metadata is one of the main things that enables that. We want to make responsive and fluid applications, which means that we have to go asynchronous. We don't want your UI to freeze when you're doing a web request or something. So Windows Runtime is based on asynchronous patterns. Often, and actually in most of the cases, you won't find a synchronous API. You have to go asynchronous. Now, lucky, for example, managed code developers, we have async and await in C# 5 and VB11. In JavaScript, we have promises, so, you know, you can deal with those async APIs in a variety of ways. It's an app-centric platform, which means that apps are isolated. They don't really, you know, interfere with one another. Like, if you install one app, another one doesn't start, you know, to fail all of a sudden. But you can establish communications between those apps using well-defined contracts. And I'll give you a little sample of that as well. And finally, we have platform-based versioning, meaning apps that run on Windows 8 will run on future versions. And one of the key things there is actually to have an interface-based technology. I'll talk about that in the second half of my talk as well. So let's take a look at building a first little Metro-style app, and I will start building one using HTML and CSS and JavaScript. So let's switch over to my Windows 8 machine here, which is running the developer preview that you can download from the web today. Later you, of course, can also use the consumer preview. But so, first of all, I guess you've already seen, you know, Windows 8 in action. We have this start screen. We have a lot of applications. As you can see, I've been, you know, playing with a lot of apps here. All those stars are my custom inventions. So I've been doing quite a few demos last week already. And so the applications we want to build are the apps that look like, you know, those full-screen immersive apps that I have sitting here, like, for example, the weather application. And if the internet cooperates, we will actually see, you know, the weather forecast in different places of the world, you know, and even, you know, some nice moon in the back. And so I can switch between those apps. I'm not going to give a full Windows 8 demo here, but so you have fast and fluid ways of switching between those apps. You can dock them next to each other if you like to. You can do all sorts of nice things here. Like, oh, not on the screen resolution. The screen resolution on the projector doesn't allow me to do this next to each other thing. But so, let's actually go into VS 11 Express, which is an Express edition for the Windows Developer Preview. You can also install VS 11 Developer Preview as well. But so, I'm just going to use this one to create a new Metro-style app. So you can see, in Belgium, I used my lucky number WinWeb App 13, which worked out great. So I hope 14 will be my lucky number today. So let's go to JavaScript, create a blank application, WinWeb app 14 over here. And so what I will get from Visual Studio is, first of all, an HTML file, some CSS, and a JavaScript file as well. So let's Visual Studio take some time to think about what I asked it to do. And here we go. We have an HTML file, just classic HTML. We have some WinJS helper libraries sitting here. And we have a default.js file. So now let's actually start writing a little piece of code here. Let's just do H1, you know, hello WinRT, just to set the scene a little bit and just press F5 to show that this thing, of course, works. So here I'm using HTML as the markup language. I could use XAML in C#, VB, or C++ as well. This is the WWA host. That blue screen you saw was actually loading the host. And now you see your, you know, Metro-style app being hosted inside the container. So now let's do some real stuff here. Let's talk to the WinRT APIs. So of course, because it's just, you know, JavaScript, I can use everything I already know. I can just insert a script tag and start writing some functions, you know, function foo, for example. And so function foo, I will hook it up to my onload handler for my application. So I'll just do onload in the body and call foo. Things you know from the web, like in HTML. Now, I could also go to the default.js file and put things in here where you can specify startup code. Just to fit everything on the same screen, I'm just going to write the code in line in the HTML file. Of course, you can put things in different locations as well. So here's my function foo. And what I want to do is I want to talk to the Windows runtime to present, for example, a picker dialog so that the user can select some picture that we then want to show in the UI. So let's do a file picker dialog. And let's now new up a windows.storage. And you see you have full IntelliSense through the namespaces of Windows runtime in here from JavaScript. So I will do pickers, and I will do file open picker like this. So now I have a new file open dialog, a file open picker, which is full screen, and we'll see it in just a moment. And then in FPD, we'll actually say what the file types are that I want to display in my dialog. So file type filter over here, when you look at this from a JavaScript angle, and we'll talk about this much more later, this looks like an array. You can actually add things to it. You can push things in it, like push is a common method that you see in those collection types in JavaScript. But if I would do the same thing from C#, it would look like an ILIST of T. You would have the add method. You would have a for each that you can do over it. You could write link queries, you know, over those kind of things. Like, that's what the language projections do. They make things familiar to you. So I'm just going to add JPEG over here and PNG. And then finally, I'm going to display the file picker dialog. And I will do that using pick single file async, which is the async method to open the picker, because, well, the user can take a long time to make up his mind, so we want this to be asynchronous. So let's call this thing. And now, because it's an async operation, how do I complete the operation? I don't want a block for it. So instead, you use a promise in JavaScript. If you use C#, as we will see later, or VB, you can just use the await keyword in C# 5 or VB 11. But so in JavaScript, we use promises to represent asynchrony. That's a common way of doing it. And I will just do this. Function file, and then, you know, in my callback that I specify here, when the user picks a file, my callback will execute, and I will actually be able to do some interesting things here. So let's just do debug write line just to have something to start with, you know, file.path or something. And I will set a breakpoint just to show what the experience looks like at this point. So just give it a second to load. My onload handler actually triggered. I now have this file picker dialog, which I can interact with using touch, of course. And you see some pictures here, like pictures from Ghent, which is the city I used to live in before I went to Redmond. And so here you see the file path of the file being picked, my callback executed when the user clicked OK. So now I can do stuff with the file object I got back. Let's do something more interesting. Let's try to display it in an image tag. So I will have an image tag with an ID, which I will call, let's say, photo. And then in my callback, I will say photo.source equals, and now I need to do a little thing here, window. window.url, case sensitive, you know, this is the window object I'm talking to. Window.url creates object URL for the file. This actually creates a URL that points to that file that's isolated so that you can't interact with the file system in ways that the user didn't intend to. So you can't start building your own file paths here without giving user permission to access the file. So create object URL in this false thing basically tells the thing that once you've used this object, you've imported it in your app, we don't need to keep it around any longer. You don't need to extend its lifetime. So that's what I have here, and that should actually complete my application that will show the picture as soon as I pick it over here. I could use touch as well, of course, you know, like no hands there. And there we go. We now have interacted with the file picker dialog from JavaScript, used HTML-based technologies to do the display, an H1 tag, an image tag, all of that stuff. Later, we'll actually see how to do something very similar from inside C# and VB as well. So let me stop the debugger here and switch back to the slides. So as you saw, it's really easy to talk to the Windows runtime using the metadata that we've actually seen through IntelliSense. But how does everything really work? Let's take a look behind the scenes a little bit more. So this is the architecture slide, sort of the thread throughout my talk, and I will highlight certain boxes which we will talk about. So let's actually start by talking about this metadata and the namespace in which all our APIs live. So what's the Windows metadata? Well, the Windows metadata is basically a full self-describing, machine-readable, you know, set of files that describes the entire Windows Runtime API surface. It's generated natively by different compilers. So if you use C++, C#, VB, you can actually write your own, you know, WinMD files, and I will show an example of that later on. So those compilers generate with, you know, D8 or some additional tools at build time, those Windows metadata files. They're based on the CLI metadata, the common language infrastructure. So it's the same metadata format as we have in managed code for the CLR. You know, why invent a new metadata format if we already have one around and we have rich tools that are building on top of that? So it's really just ECMA 335, and I will prove that in just a moment to you, by using ildesm to look in a Windows metadata file, just the ildesm that comes with the .NET framework. It's rich enough in a sense that it contains enough type information so that all those language projections can do intelligent stuff with it. They know about the collection types, they know about certain patterns, and they know how to map those patterns into something that's familiar to you if you're using any of those languages. And of course, for statically known information, which means everything in that metadata, we can actually provide you rich IntelliSense, no matter, you know, what language you're using. So what's the Windows namespace then? Well, the Windows namespace is the logical organization of the API. Sort of corresponds to the block diagram you saw in my first slide. You do Windows dot, and then you see, you know, for each of the blocks, you see some namespace. So it's a unified hierarchical place to find things. Unlike, for example, classic header files. Well, you have, first of all, hundreds of header files, and those header files all contain lots of functions. And how do the functions relate? Like you have create window over here, and 1,000 lines later, you see destroy window. Like those things belong to each other, but they live in all sorts of places. So we have now a hierarchical way of actually finding all of those things. And there is one type for each function. Like to do a file picker dialog, you create a file picker dialog, and then you have all the functions associated with that. It's good old object-oriented programming. So you have great IntelliSense, as you saw before, and you can actually extend the catalog of those, you know, Windows runtime objects by using, for example, C++, C#, or VB. You can build your own objects, but they are private to your app. So your implementations of custom objects can actually not interfere with other applications. You can't register things in the catalog that comes with Windows, but you can redeploy your own WinMD files with your app that contains certain helper functions, for example. So that allows, you know, apps not to start affecting each other when you install new components on the system. Objects can be seen from JavaScript. What that means is, well, in JavaScript, we don't really have class-level declarations and all of that stuff. We don't have a compile phase. So you can't really build those objects like those, you know, an object with 5 methods and properties and all of those things. Well, JavaScript doesn't really give you declarations. So in JavaScript, you can't build those custom objects that you can give to somebody else. You can create your JS files if you like to. But if you build your custom objects using C++, C#, VB, like you create a WinMD file, and I will show that later, those objects can just be used from JavaScript. So what are the basic types? Of course, with a runtime comes a type system. So let's talk briefly about the types we have. First of all, when you create a new runtime, a rule of thumb is to have a new string type. That's no different in Windows runtime, but for a very good reason. So this H string type that we have is designed in such a way that we don't have to make copies of strings when we send them between languages. Before, what you actually saw here on the screen was I created a JavaScript-based application with HTML that talks to Windows Runtime. Now, Windows Runtime is built in C++. And at some point, you know, I got a path, you know, file path out of that API into JavaScript. It would be kind of bad if, you know, at the marshalling boundary between the different languages, we had to make a copy of the entire string. So that's not the case. The H string type that we use in Windows Runtime doesn't require copying. So the string that's being generated by the API just surfaces all the way into your application. Of course, then, if you, for example, are in C# and you see that string coming through as if it's a CLR string, and you start doing some specific functions on it, like, for example, toUpper, well, at that point, of course, in managed code, you know, the garbage collector and the memory manager in the CLR creates a new string with uppercases. But at the marshalling boundary, there is no copying involved. So once you put your hands on it, well, of course, you can manipulate the string using classic functions that you're used to create, for example, new strings in .NET or JavaScript or whatever. Then we have some basic types, of course, integer types, signed, unsigned, all that kind of stuff. We have enumerations, just like you have enums in the .NET framework, typically to configure APIs. So you want to say what the read mode is for a file. You can say file read mode.open for read or write or all those kind of things. We have structures, which means that you can actually pass things, you know, just a bundle of objects. Like if you want to do a size, you can make a struct with an x and a y, or, you know, a width and a height integer value. There are some restrictions on what you can do inside structs. We have simple arrays for simple collection types. We have interfaces, and that's very important. I will talk a lot about that because WinRT is, in essence, an interface-based technology. We have generic interfaces, which, you know, the C++ folks not really had before. Well, you had templates, but that's slightly different still. So now we have iVector of T, iVector view of T, iMap, which is like a dictionary collection type. So you have static typing for the elements in your collection. And we'll see that that's actually very useful in just a moment. And then finally, and maybe the most important thing, is we have runtime classes, which are basically bindings to interfaces. A class can say, I'm going to implement 5 interfaces. You will just interact as a developer with the classes. You don't really have to see those interfaces. You just interact with those objects, those classes. You do whatever you want to do. But behind the scenes, things are working based on interfaces, which gives us some versioning capabilities as well, and we'll talk about it in a moment. So let's take a look at the Windows runtime metadata now, the WinMD files, as they're called, using ILDASM. So where do those metadata files, that catalog of all the WinRT APIs, live on the system? So as always, all good things in Windows live in System32. And in there we have a folder called WinMetadata. And if you go in there, you just see a whole bunch of WinMD files. Extension is WinMD. That corresponds to all those APIs you saw in the first slide. There's quite a few here, and of course you can expect that collection to grow over time. And so that's all the APIs that come with Windows 8. Now let's actually try to open up one of those guys to see what's inside such a WinMD file. And then we'll talk about why they're so important, of course, as well. So let's open the developer prompt here. And let's open ILDASM, good old ILDASM from the .NET framework. And prove to you that those WinMD files really, we should change the picker here to recognize the WinMD extension type, but that those files really are, you know, like .NET assemblies, what their metadata is concerned. So I was actually using windows.storage.pickers before, so let's open that guy. And I will actually boost the font. I just learned a few weeks ago that even good old ILDASM has something to change the font size. And so here you go. That's actually the namespace Windows Storage Pickers that has several, you know, other things inside of it, such as, over here, the good old file open picker that we used from JavaScript just a moment ago. Now, let's just take a look at this a little bit. First of all, there are some minor things that I've added that have been added to the metadata specification. So, for example, this Windows runtime thing is something that's new. This uses the format that assemblies use in the .NET framework, but they're not really assemblies. They just contain metadata using, you know, the same specification for metadata. But if you look at those guys, if you, for example, open pick single file async, you won't find IL code. Like, this is just the metadata describing the APIs that live in the Windows runtime, and they're implemented using native code inside Windows. In this case, this thing lives in shell32.dll, I believe. So, other things you can see here, I can draw your attention to the fact that we have things like properties. So, file type filter is something we talked to before from inside JavaScript. But notice the type over here. The type of this guy is windows.foundation.collections.ivector(string). So that's one of those generic interface types that's exposed by Windows Runtime. Now, when we saw this thing from inside JavaScript, it didn't at all look like an ivector, which is some weird thing inside Windows Runtime that we'll see occur in a couple of places. But we saw this thing as if it was a collection in JavaScript. It had a push method. Now, if I would look at ivector(t), it wouldn't have a push method. That's the language projection doing a mapping to make this thing feel natural to, for example, JavaScript users. This thing, the pick single file async, we also interacted with, and, you know, it didn't at all look much different than the name here, but notice it started with a capital P. In Windows Runtime, we use, you know, the same conventions that you have in for example, C-sharp and managed code. They start with capital letters. But JavaScript people sort of like their things to start with lower cases. So that's what the Windows projection is doing as well. It's making things as familiar as we can to you. Now, the object that came back from this is a pick single file operation. That thing, if we look at it, pick single file operation over here, will implement some interface called iasyncOperationOfT. It's an operation that returns a storage file. But if you look at this thing, it doesn't even have a then method. Yet in JavaScript, because this is an iasync operation, the language projection turns it into a promise, which is the way that JavaScript represents async operations. So in other words, if I go here, I will see a then method, which is, you know, the way to do an async operation. You also have cancel in this world. So that's actually some of the richness that Windows metadata allows us to do. And in fact, you can also go to the the object browser. Object browser. Over here. And you can just go inside, you know, the Windows runtime, Windows 8.0. And so existing tooling like the object browser and IntelliSense just works because we already have something that can read all of this metadata. So I could just search in here, and now I'm just really dotting into the Windows runtime APIs. So I can find the same pickers over here, the file open picker, and it looks like what we see in ILDASM. So the existing tooling works. In fact, we even use FXCOP against those guys to see, you know, violations against certain guidelines, like existing tools can continue working, because we use the same metadata as the CLR has used for a long time now. So let's talk a little more about some of the specifics. What are those Windows runtime objects that we've been looking at? Like, we've seen the file open dialog, the file open picker, but how does it really work? Because we didn't see any code, for example. We didn't find IL code or anything. Like, how does it tie those objects from the metadata together with their implementations? So let's talk about the Windows Runtime Core and language projections in somewhat more detail. So what's a Windows Runtime object look like? Here you see an example. It's the file information object that lives somewhere in the Windows storage APIs. And as you can see, you know, it's an object that has multiple interfaces implemented on it, such as iStorageFile, iStorageItem, iStorageItemInformation. This is what we call a runtime class. This is the way you actually see your objects. You don't have to worry about those interfaces and the other things on this slide, but I want to explain to you how things really work. So as you can see in that blue box, this object lives in shell32.dll. I haven't looked at shell32.dll at all. I've been looking at the bottom there in my slides, oops, on the other side there, to the Windows metadata in, system32 win metadata. And there I found this interface and the class, and you would see the class implementing all of the interfaces. But how does it tie those things together? How does it know if you ask for a file information object where to find the implementation of it? And the answer is there is something called an activation store, which lives in the registry, that actually ties those things together. It knows that, that object is implemented in that particular DLL, and we'll see how things actually get loaded at runtime in just a moment. Now, at the bottom, you might actually see an interface that you already know. Unfortunately, it's called iUnknown, so it's kind of counterintuitive. But people who've used COM before will know iUnknown. It's, the base, interface of all the COM-based objects. The Windows runtime uses the COM infrastructure to do a lot of things, but it adds a lot of stuff to it. So just saying it's an evolution of COM is kind of unfair. It uses COM because we have this rich infrastructure inside the platform already, but we add much more to it. So iUnknown is the interface that has addref, release, and query interface. That's, things we still actually use and love. So actually the Windows runtime is, reference counting based. On top of that, we have a new interface called iInspectable. Now, inside the Windows runtime team, the story goes that some people wanted to call this guy iKnown, but that was kind of confusing with iUnknown, so they actually called it iInspectable. Now, what iInspectable gives you on top of iUnknown is the ability, to inspect an object, to figure out what its members are, to interrogate its, type information. Just like system.object in the CLR sort of has a getType method. We can actually ask about the object and inspect it to see what its capabilities are. And we'll see that the language projections and tools like Visual Studio use this capability quite extensively. So what do projections do? On the left, I have an object I want to interact with. On the right, I have blue boxes, which are my application code written in C++, managed code, HTML and JavaScript, whatever I like. And at the bottom, I have Windows metadata. How do those things tie together? So when I'm building a C++-based app, what's really happening is that the compiler, at compile time, looks at that metadata and distills all the information it needs at runtime, bakes it into your, executable that you're creating, and at runtime, we don't really need to look at the Windows metadata to make things work. So language projection of C++, which is implemented in, the compiler knows about it, the CRT knows about it, the projection that you're actually dealing with there is very, very tiny. It doesn't have to interact at runtime with the metadata store. When we're talking about C# and VB, there's a combination happening. The tools know about the Windows metadata. At compile time, they interrogate all of those things. But also at runtime, at some points, the CLR goes to the metadata to find out more information about the types. So there's a little bit of interrogation happening there. It's actually also very lightweight, so nothing to worry about. And then when you're talking about HTML and JavaScript-based applications, Chakra, which is the JavaScript engine that we have, actually, it's a dynamic language. What do you want? Well, it actually interacts with the Windows metadata store to find everything. Like you dot into an object, it's a dynamic object, it goes to the Windows metadata store. Because every object is inspectable, it can find out about its members and make sure everything is actually working according to plan. Which doesn't mean at design time, because there's no compile time, but at design time in Visual Studio, we can actually give you IntelliSense to guide you writing the right code. But ultimately, the thing still runs dynamically. It is JavaScript after all. So how does an object get created in Windows runtime? Let's actually walk through the several steps here. So first of all, of course, the application asks to new up an object. Like I said, I want to create a new file, open dialog, for example. Now, what's the next thing that happens? What you are seeing on this slide really is something you don't have to touch upon yourself. You just do new and it just works. But just to give you a sense of how things are tied together, let's walk through this slide. So the app asks to create a new object. What happens in the language projection is, it passes the name of that object, that type, to something called RO activate instance, which is the Windows runtime API. So once we're in there, this thing looks at the activation store and actually finds, you know, the Windows RT object manager actually finds the DLL that implements that object. Like, for example, shell 32 for the file information class. So it loads the DLL, and then it looks for a so-called activation factory. There are different patterns to activate an object. An object can be activated in process, it can be created out of process. And for example, the way that the Windows shell, the start menu in Windows 8, sees those live tiles and all of those things of your applications is because it actually has access to an object that lives in your application, which is out of process. So you know those things are tied together because an object got activated out of process. When you click a tile, your application is really created as a WinRT object that's activated out of process, as opposed to being in process. So there are different activation patterns, but ultimately, the code inside the object, inside the constructor, if you will, gets executed to basically create the instance of the object, and the iInspectable guy is returned. At this point, we have an object instance sitting somewhere, we can point to it, and we can interrogate all of its information about its types and all its members. Then the language projection, depending the language that you're using, will do some work or a lot of work, but it's as tiny as possible ultimately. But so the projection creates a tiny wrapper using all the metadata it can get from iInspectable to make this thing look and feel as you actually wish. For example, in JavaScript, you know, the async operations will become promises. So it actually does all of that stuff. It creates a little wrapper. And then the object that we got back originally, the iInspectable, is sort of given to the wrapper. And then the thing you get in your application is nothing but the wrapper. So you talk to the wrapper, which talks to the underlying WinRT object. And so depending on the language, the projection does other things. For example, in the CRT and in, you know, C++, when you create one of those WinRT objects, the way you will actually reference them, like, you know, those allocated objects is using a hat symbol, like, you know, file picker dialog hat as opposed to star. Well, what's really happening behind that scenes is all, you know, the lifetime management, like add, ref, and release, is really done like a C comforter in, you know, C++, if there are some C++ guys here. But so the projection inserts all of that code to make sure that, you know, the add, ref, and release code is done in appropriate places. So depending on the language, the projection does some other things. But at the end of the day, what you have to know is start and end and the fact you asked to create an object and you got something back you can dot into. So how does versioning work? I explained before that having interfaces allows us to do some nice things with versioning. And so that's what I'm showing over here. Say that in the Windows metadata store for version 8, we have this object sitting here, you know, nice lollipop diagram with iInspectable, iUnknown, and some three other interfaces. And your app through the projection is talking to that guy. Now say we move to the next version of Windows, and that same runtime class gains some other interface implementation. It now has the iOrange interface implemented as well. So the iOrange interface, which might allow you to make juice or something, is now sitting on that object. Well, does that mean that your application built for V8 doesn't work online anymore? Absolutely not. You can take your V8 application, and it actually starts working on, you know, Windows Metadata V9 because it's a purely additive addition. So interfaces allow us to have those runtime classes like file information that you already know you're using it in your app. And then in the next version, some additional stuff might be added to it. And then, of course, you can have tooling support that says, I want my app to target 8 and beyond, which means you wouldn't see the orange interface. If you say, I just want to target 9 and beyond, well, we guarantee that that interface is there for the future. So that's actually how versioning works, thanks to having those interfaces. So let's actually do something more fancy now. Let's actually write a couple of applications now. So first of all, let's take a look at how I can do interop between JavaScript and managed code, for example. So say I want to create a Metro-style app, but I love for, you know, whatever reason, maybe it's your background or it's, you know, your skill set, I like to use HTML to render stuff. But instead of just, you know, writing all the code in JavaScript, because I'm not that fluent in JavaScript, I want to write some code in C#. So I want to talk from inside JavaScript to C# code. So how can I do that? Let's in fact change this thing a little bit. Oh, something's going on. Maybe I pressed the wrong button. Okay, so recap, I have HTML here, I want to talk to it using JavaScript. Good. Using C#, I mean. So what can I do over here? Let's actually add a new project to my solution. And now let's go to C# over here, Windows Metro style, and create a class library. I will give it the nice name class library 1. And so what I have now is just a regular, you know, assembly that I'm building using CLR technologies. Now, in order for this guy to expose inside JavaScript to be able to talk to it, I need to make one little change. Go to the properties, and instead of building a class library, which gives me an assembly that contains, you know, IL code and all the metadata, I need to export it in a way that Windows Runtime can talk to it. So I will actually make a WinMD file out of it as opposed to a class library. That's the only change I have to make. And now I have a class library that exposes itself such that other Windows Runtime capable languages can talk to it. So now that I have this thing, let's actually just for fun and giggles try to build it. So here we go. Let's try to build this class library. And see that there are some things missing. First of all, my lack of HTML skills sort of shows up, but it's just warning, so I can hide it. But so, if you look at this thing, there are a couple of things that are not going according to plan yet. First of all, it says, well, class library 1.class1 is unsealed, but is not enabled for composition. What does that mean? Well, Windows Runtime is an interface-based technology, and in fact, there's Windows Runtime types, you know, we don't really have inheritance, like object inheritance for those guys. So, you know, in order to expose an object like class 1, we need to seal it. You can have unsealed classes if you're dealing with XAML-based APIs. We have inheritance for controls and those kind of things. But in general, you know, there is no object inheritance. So that's the first thing. That's just at the boundary, by the way. This is your publicly visible members in your WinMD file need to obey to some rules. It's just a very small set of rules, actually. One of them is that if you have classes that leak to the surface, they have to be sealed. Now, I can have a private class, you know, class 1, which is unsealed, or class 2, that I'm using internally here. That's all fine. But at the boundary, you know, the interface to WinMD, to the Windows Runtime, things need to be sealed. So that's my first thing that I've done here. There was a second error. Whoops. Actually says, unable to determine a default interface for runtime class. That's, you know, a WinRT naming, runtime class. Class library 1.class1. Class does not implement any interfaces, blah, blah, blah. So what it's really trying to do here, when I'm building this guy, because WinRT is based on interfaces, it tries to distill an interface from class 1. But because it doesn't have any members, it's kind of empty. So it's kind of a void argument to make. So I have to add some stuff to it. Why would you expose an empty class? That doesn't really make any sense. So let's call this class greeting service. And let's do public string, you know, get greeting, string name. And so because in JavaScript I don't know how to do string concatenation, I want to use C# to do that. So I know how to do this stuff. I can do return string.format, you know, and I can even make it localizable and all of that good stuff, you know. I can say hello 0 with a nice comma here, an exclamation mark, and pass in the name. So here I'm just interacting with everything, you know, in the system namespace, everything from, you know, the CLR. This is managed code. You can do whatever you like in here, and now expose, you know, this class and this member to the rest of WinRT. In fact, I can also dot into, you know, the Windows Runtime APIs here. Like, I can just talk to those guys as well. So you have the system namespace, you have the Windows namespace. Everything can be used in here. Now, I have this guy. Let's try to build it again. Class library 1. Elements defined in a namespace cannot be explicitly declared as private. Okay, I have to move some things out here. This guy actually would work this way. But let's not bother too much about this guy now. Let's just build it and see this greeting service type being available. So just to prove to you that what we've generated here is a WinMD file, let's open the containing folder, go to bin debug, and here you see the WinMD file that, you know, we talked about before. And so let's actually try to open it in ILDESM over here. And so that's what the C# compiler generated. It generated the greeting service object, as you can see over here, and it has get greeting in here. Okay. It has the interface, which is sitting here, which has the get greeting method, because WinRT talks to objects in terms of their interfaces, so we automatically got an interface distilled, unlike classic com interop. If you do classic com interop in the CLR, you have to create your own interface, put a GUID attribute on top of it, make it com visible, do lots of, you know, fancy dances to make things work. Here, you know, things just, the compiler generates all the stuff for you. So I have an interface, I have a runtime class over here. As you can see here, you know, it's a Windows runtime guy. And then next to that, I have the CLR implementation of this guy, which you will talk to, which contains the IL code, which the CLR puts its finger on, and this contains the IL code for string format. So I have a runtime class, I have an interface, that's what WinRT sees, and then I have my CLR implementation behind. So this will load, you know, the CLR in wwahost.exe, you know, use all the great things that the CLR has to offer, and then expose this stuff to JavaScript. So it also means I could use link and, you know, all fancy things in here as well. So now let's try to use it from the WinWeb app. Let's add a cross-project reference to class library 1. Because it's a WinMD file, I can do an add reference from any, you know, Metro-style application project. So now I have class library 1 referenced. And let's go back to default HTML. And let's no longer use the file picker here. But let's try to update my, you know, hello tag over here. Let's actually use a div tag this time, so that I have something that has a name that I can talk to. Let's make this thing title. And actually, I have some HTML skills. They don't stretch any further than adjusting the size of something. But so let's say I want to make this extra, extra large. So I have a title sitting here. I have class library 1. Let's tie them together. Let's do file, greeting service equals new. And now class library 1, okay, because I imported class library 1, I can dot into it. I can dot into the greeting service, that's great. I can create an instance, so that's me talking to that WinMD object. And now I have the greeting service, as you can see, and I can dot into the getGreeting method now with lowercase g, because it's JavaScript. So the projection turned that thing into the way I like to see things in JavaScript. So I can go here, I can pass in a string. You even see static type information because we know we expect a string. So let's do WinRT as the thing we want to say hi to. And so now I have a hello text, which will be a string. And now I can do title.inner text equals hello. And so now I have my JavaScript guy newing up my C# object, which runs in the CLR, do get greeting using string format, and marshal the string back to say hello WinRT. That little artifact is my image tag that's still there from the last demo. So you see, that was pretty easy to do. Now let's do something a little more fancy. Let's actually just try to expose some other members. What about doing some statics? Let's do public static, you know, int foo, and make it return 42. Okay? Let's actually see how that looks. Let's build this guy and take a look in JavaScript how I can access a static member. Oops, what did I do? Oh, okay, class library 1 is used by ILDASM. Okay. So let's build it again. Okay, here we go. Let's go here and let's talk to the greeting service. Oops, service dot. Do I see it? No, because those are the instance methods on my type. So where do I find the static method? Well, you know, I can just do class library 1.greetingService dot, and here I see my foo object, which returns a number, which is the JavaScript type for an int coming back. So as you can see, I can dot into static members, I can talk into instance members, I can do things like properties, they would also show up in a way that's familiar to JavaScript users. I could even do event handlers, all of those kind of things. Let's do one more thing. Let's actually do public static or let's just do public member here, which returns a list of int. Let's call it bar, like this. And let's return, a new list of int. It's a CLR list, which contains 2, 3, 5, 7, 11. There are no prizes to win if you spot the little hidden sequence in here. But so now that I have this guy, let's try to build it and see how things look from JavaScript. Now, you will see one error here. It says that the method has a parameter, you know, return types are also parameters, of type list of int 32. List of int 32 is not a WinRT type. WinRT doesn't know about list of t. But it says, although this type is not a valid Windows runtime type, it implements interfaces which are valid Windows runtime types. Consider changing the method signature instead to one of the following types. Return an iList of int32, an iReadOnly list of int32, which is an addition we made to the CLR, or return iEnumerable of int32, which are things you can marshal across those, you know, WinRT boundaries. So I will just make a little fix, make an I here. And again, in private members, you know, I don't have to do this. I could actually do something like this. You know, I could have my internal method, which is Qux, which is private. I can return list of t, all I want. But then on the public surface of my, you know, WinRT, WinMD file, it needs to follow, you know, the interfaces that WinRT knows about. So I can do Qux here, return it as an iList. Internally, it uses list of t. I could also inline those two things, of course. Just to show that, you know, you can have multiple internal members and things over here as well. But so now I have my publicly visible bar, which uses iList. I have my Qux, which uses list. And everything is nice. So now let's go here. Let's go to my greeting service, which has a bar method. Okay. And notice what it returns. It returns a windows.foundation.collections.ivector of number. That's the WinRT type that corresponds to iList. iList in the CLR is mapped onto iVector that all the other WinRT languages know about. What does the language projection do to this guy? It looks like a JavaScript array. I can append things to it as opposed to using add, because, well, that's how you do things in here. You can even see that it's append of t value. You see it's a generic method. You can do things like for each. You can for each over this guy. So I could write a for each loop in JavaScript using function x and then write, you know, my for each body over here. I could use things like, you know, they have some little link-like support in JavaScript using filter and map. I could do aware and select. Like, this is just what the JavaScript user wants to see out of a collection. So the projection maps it onto something that's familiar to the user here. So that's what we have. So this is just a little overview of things we can do. Now let's actually switch gears and build a C-sharp-based Metro-style application and show some other capabilities. Now, as you saw here before, the pattern I want to talk about now is this async stuff, like this then thing that we use in JavaScript. How does it look to do those kind of async things in C-sharp? It's, again, the role of the language projection to make it look familiar. So say I want to start with XAML, I want to create a C-sharp-based Metro-style app. How do those things look in there? So this is what JavaScript people like. Now let's take a look at what managed code developers like. Let's create an application, application 6, in C-sharp. Just start with a clean slate. I have my good old XAML designer here. So I can use all my existing XAML skills to actually build those rich controls and everything you like. In fact, Laurent Bunion has a session, I think it's later today, on porting a Silverlight XAML-based application to Windows 8. And you will see that, you know, you can just transfer the XAML. I will add a column to this thing with my good, you know, XAML skills. Yes, you know, I created a column somehow. Don't ask me how I did that. There we go. So I have a column now, and I can drag a button control onto it. So here's my button. And then let's have an image control in the other, you know, column over here and auto-size it to fill, you know, that column. So just some basic XAML. And let's make the image control also have a name so that I can talk to it from inside my code. So that's what I have. Let's actually just try to run it just to prove that you can see it. Now you will see a different host that actually runs the code. You see a black background that's, you know, not the web host, but that's a different hosting process. And I have a button I can touch. Doesn't really do much, but, you know, you get the idea. So now let's try to write some code. I can go to this button and actually hook up an event handler. It's over here. think I can double click it as well, actually. But just to show you that those things just have events as we all used to. Let's hook up an event handler and write a little piece of code in here. So I don't want this guy anymore. I don't want this guy either anymore. So what I want to interact with this time, I could do the file picker again, but we've seen it before. Let's do some other API. In this case, I want to talk to the webcam APIs. So let's do var camera equals new windows.media.capture. Again, rich IntelliSense into the Windows APIs. And let's create a camera capture UI over here. Because it's, you know, just Visual Studio, and it knows all the metadata, it knows about namespaces, I could abbreviate this thing, do control dot, and, you know, ask the compiler to insert using a certain namespace, like all the good old tricks just work. So now you see I have some system stuff here, I have some Windows stuff here. Windows UI XAML is where the Metro style support for XAML lives. And then we have some other things sitting here, including my namespace that I just imported. So now I have the camera object. Let's take a look at what I can do with the camera. Well, I can set some photo settings, some video settings. Let's try to make some photos. So let's go to the photo settings and set something called the cropped aspect ratio, which allows me to have pictures that have certain ratios, like 4:3, 16:9, all those kind of things. So let's new up a new size object over here that contains 4 and 3. You know, so that's my ratio. So now I have this guy. Next, what I want to do is I want to pick a picture using the capture file async. If I would do this in JavaScript, it would be a lowercase c. In, you know, C#, we like to see uppercase C, so that's fine. And I can pass in here a flag, you know, or an enum value, which is the mode, and I want to take a photo in this case. So just good old enums. So now what I get back here is, let me call it X because I quite not know yet what I got back here. It's a capture or camera capture UI capture file operation. There are no length restrictions on names of types apparently, so we get a pretty long one here. But so what this guy is, I can do F12 on it to go to definition. And so you see it lives in Windows Media Capture.winmd, and you see, you know, the Windows SDK there, which contains that WinMD file. And you see it's an iAsync operation of storage file. That's the way WinRT represents async operations. Now, I have a talk about C# async tomorrow. So if you haven't seen C# or VB async yet, just, you know, bear with me here. But the way that you now take out, you know, the value that's captured asynchronously is by using this new await keyword in C#. So I make this method async. It actually gives me some more screen real estate. And await the camera file async API. And now what this thing returns is no longer an iAsync operation of storage file, but now I have a storage file. And what really happens here is the compiler does a transformation that, you know, all the code before the await runs during the button click event handler, and everything after the await, including my assignment and this curly brace and the rest of the code I will write here, will actually be lifted into, you know, the continuation. In JavaScript, you would have to do this yourself. You would say camera capture file async, then, and then you would pass in a function that does the rest of your method. So you would have to lift things out yourself. C# 5 and VB 11 have now this great async support, so I can just write my code as is. So now I have this file. I can check whether the file is not null, because if it's null, the user clicked cancel. And now I have this file object, which, as you can see, you can do a lot of things with. You can go and do copy async if I want to copy the file. All the long-running operations in WinRT, meaning longer than 50 milliseconds, are asynchronous, period. There's no synchronous variant, because if you do the synchronous one, you might frost over your UI, things might be unresponsive. We don't want that for touch-based applications at all. So everything is async. So you have to go through async things and use, you know, promises in JavaScript, or if you're a managed code developer, use this await support. So what I want to do here is I want to read the file using open async. I can pass in a file access mode. In fact, let me abbreviate this guy again. File access mode lives in windows.storage. And let's open it for read. What does this thing return? It returns a stream retrieval operation. What's a stream retrieval operation? Well, I could go into it, F12, you know, open async. Again, my WinMD file helps out a lot here. And you see it's an async operation that gives back a random access stream. So here I get my byte stream back. So what do I do with that guy? Well, of course, I'm in C#, so I can await it, and then I have my stream coming out of this guy. So now I have my stream. Again, the method gets split into different pieces here. Like, we start the asynchronous operation, the rest of my code will be lifted into the callback. I don't have to do all of this stuff myself. If I would like to, I could. I could go in here, assign a completed event handler, which is like a delegate type, and do all of this maddening decomposition of my code myself. Let's just use await. So now I have my stream object, which is a random access stream, and now I can create an image, which is a new bitmap image. People who have used Silverlight or WPF will recognize some of this code. I can set the source on the image to the stream, and now I can say photo dot source equals image. Photo was my control on my UI, which was an image control. So now I've talked to the camera UI, I've set the aspect ratio, I kicked off an asynchronous operation to capture the file, or capture the picture, read from the file, created the bitmap image, and bound it to the UI. I need to do one more thing. If you actually hover over those guys, you see something at the bottom there. Associated capabilities. In order to call this API, you need to have webcam and or microphone capability. That's a way that Windows Runtime allows to delegate, the choice whether, your application can talk to the webcam UI to the end user. So the end user gets a prompt when you actually call this thing. So you have to go to this app manifest to declare that your application wants to have access to the webcam. So I go to capabilities, I say this guy needs to have access to the webcam, not microphone, I'm not using a video. And, photos with sound is kind of weird anyway, so we don't need the microphone capability in this case. And so let's try to run this guy now. As you can see over here, it's building. And now we go here, I click on this button thing. I can allow access to the webcam here, which is actually a broker that's actually presenting this prompt. I'm allowing it now. That's actually my back-facing camera on the device. This will be my front-facing camera. Okay, here we go. I can just press this guy. Let's redo it. Much better. And now, I never look good on photos anyway. But you see I have this crop dialog that respects the 4:3 ratio. I can just select the picture, do yes here, and now the picture is imported in my UI. Just a couple of lines of code to do this. Now, I could go even further. I could make it possible for this app to share the picture with another application using those app contacts. Let's actually just do that and then switch back to Visual Studio here. So let's stop this guy and actually add up one more thing which allows apps to talk to other apps in a well-defined manner. And that's something called the Data Transfer Manager. So Data Transfer Manager in application model allows me to get a transfer manager for my current window, and I can hook up an event, just like regular C# events, that will get triggered when another app wants to get a picture from my app or some other kind of data. So I'm just doing tap tap here, just everything you could do before. I'm now hooking up an event handler to a WinRT object, all the materials in the room that you already are familiar with. By the way, this data requested thing is of type typed event handler, which lives in the system namespace. So now the CLR also has typed event handlers. So you no longer have to see object sender, event args E. You can also have T sender, T event args. So it can be generic in both. So that's pretty nice. Now, what can I do over here? I can go to the args and look at the request and basically send data back or failed request for data. So of course, I want to pick this stream, so that's the thing I want to send between applications, the picture that the user has taken. So let's lift this guy into a field. So now I have a field which contains a random access stream over here. And now, if the user hasn't clicked on the button yet, this stream object will still be null. Then I want to fail the request. Otherwise, I want to send over the stream to the other application. So let's just do this. If stream is null, then args.request.fail with display text, no picture, picture has been taken yet, else stream dot, well, not stream, args.request.data.setBitmap and give it, you know, our stream. So now I'm sending the stream as a bitmap to the other side. And if the other side, you know, allows to take in a bitmap, you know, it will actually suck that data in and do something useful with it. So now as I do this guy, or as I compile this thing and run this guy, what you can see over here is, you know, I still have my app. I can go to the charms, which is this little thing on the right. I can do share, and you can see no picture has been taken yet. So the share charm actually went to my app, called that event, the event got raised, and did a request to see whether we already had something to share. I don't have anything to share, so let's do button. Actually, take a picture again. Let's do the background this time. Let's do, you know, this nice pattern that will become, you know, my next desktop background. Yeah, it's beautiful. This might be, you know, a desktop we ship in Windows 8. No, not really. So I have this guy now, and now I can go here, do share, and now I see, because I set a bitmap on there, I have a Socialite application which knows how to take in a picture. So I can go into the Socialite app, which will actually put it on Facebook. Fancy picture taken on stage in Tech Days. You see the app is rendering, you know, the picture, it's being sucked in by the other app asynchronously. I can do share on Facebook, and if you're not a friend of mine on Facebook yet, you should do that now to actually see the result. And I will actually give you access. Okay, it's kind of, you know, sad to have to ask the audience to add me on Facebook. Yeah, whatever. Okay, so that's actually sharing stuff. So let's actually wrap up and talk about a few more things. We've seen some runtime patterns in passing. I had a vector at some point. It surfaced as, you know, a collection type in JavaScript. If I would do it in CLR, it would look like an ILIST. In this case, we've been looking at events. We've been looking at delegates. The good thing is they just work as you expect them to. We have property sets, which people in XAML might be familiar with. We have asynchronous interfaces. Those are those async operations you can do then on in JavaScript or await in C# and VB. And we have the contracts that are well-defined ways that apps can interact with each other. So it's a, you know, way to restrict access between apps to a well-defined contract. Those are the collections, some of the collection types. You have different projections. We've talked about those. In the CLR, they look like IEnumerable of T. If you're C++, they will look like SCL collections. If you are using HTML and JavaScript, they will look like JavaScript arrays and those kind of things. Asynchronous objects, I've already indicated, you know, the need for that. You don't want your app to block when you're doing a file copy operation, or, you know, the user definitely takes more than 50 seconds or 50 milliseconds, better, to, you know, take a picture from a cam or access something. So you definitely want responsive applications, so asynchrony is a good way to do that. So async is the way to go. Like, you won't find synchronous blocking operations to do long-running computations or long-running operations like I/O. So here you see how we did this, you know, camera thing in C#. This is the code I just showed you a couple of minutes ago. If you had to do this just to drive home the point that WinRT is an object-oriented, very discoverable API to do this kind of stuff, if you wanted to do this in C# before talk to the webcam, you were basically pulling your hair out with all sorts of pinvoke signatures. Hopefully some good soul on pinvoke.net had the signatures already. You needed like 20 of those functions just to take a picture. If you didn't get your marshalling right, you know, things would severely blow up. So this is definitely much of an improvement in terms of accessing all that richness. The nice thing is, well, now we no longer need some other guy to build pinvoke or com interop facilities to all the rich stuff added to the operating system. Like, Windows ships with those WinMD files, they're ready to use immediately from the CLR, from JavaScript, from C++. No longer waiting for interop libraries to appear. So that's great. I've already shown you the demo. That was actually the webcam demo where we showed the async facility collections we saw before in different shapes and forms. Some things to wrap up, some background information. You can find more on channel 9 with the build content. We have, of course, a threading model. You know, typically you interact with the UI thread. Some other operations are happening on thread pools. Nice thing is you don't really have to know much about that if you use promises like then, or if you use await, like, things just come back on the right thread for you. Like, so, you know, not too much to worry about. If you like the low-level stuff, It's based on an SDA, single-threaded department, but it's much better than before. It's not reentrant, which can be, you know, the cause of much grief before. Then we have brokered objects. We actually saw that one sort of before when we did the camera capture UI. You saw that little strip that was asking the user to access something. That's really a brokered object. What's going on here is your app talks to an object which lives out of process, and you know, seamlessly a proxy gets actually created to talk to the object that lives elsewhere. So, for example, the way the shell launches applications is through facilities like out-of-process activation. So just a little side note there. So summary, as you've seen, the Windows Runtime is something that allows you to build those Metro-style full-screen immersive touch-based applications in any of the languages that you see fit. Like if you have skill set in, you know, HTML5 JavaScript, you can use that. If you like to use managed code, you can use that. If you like to use C++, you can do that as well. So the choice of language and environment. And so there is just one Windows API. You dot into Windows, you see all the rich capabilities that the OS has, and you can access all of those things seamlessly. So with that, I'm actually at the end. I'm out of time at this point. So if you have any questions, you can come to me afterwards. I will be around. Tomorrow I have a talk about the future of C# and VB, where I will talk in much more detail about async and await. And then I also have a talk later tomorrow in the evening somewhere that will talk about how async and await works internally, like all the fancy compiler transformations that are happening. So if you're interested, please catch me over there. And thanks for your attention.